Commitments by Simon Brett, with Rosemary Leach as Anna, Nicola Paget as Victoria, and Celia Imrie as Charlotte. Episode 5, Running in the Family.
And it was awful, Anna. I heard myself coming out with it. I just said it.
What did you say?
It'll all come out in the wash. It was terrible.
I don't want to spoil your moment, Emily, but actually in my lifetime I have heard people say worse things than it'll all come out in the wash. It isn't that terrible, I promise you.
No, it wasn't the actual words that were terrible. It was the fact that I was saying them. I mean, I sounded exactly like Mummy.
Ah, I see. Yes, that could be terrible.
And it keeps happening. Do you know, the other day at school I heard myself saying, it is better to travel hopefully than to arrive.
Oh dear, that is terrible.
Yes, Mummy's always saying that.
It may be, but what's really terrible about it is the sentiment. It's a council of despair. It's saying, have ambitions by all means, but recognise there's no chance they're ever going to be realised. It's not my favourite proverb.
I gather that.
I've always preferred the approach of it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. It may be depressing, but at least it's a go-for-it philosophy.
It wasn't the meaning that I was worried about. Oh, I agree, it is pretty dreadful. It's the fact that I was just parroting Mummy. Like I'm a clone of her. Even Nigel noticed. He said, I bet your mother always says that.
Who's Nigel?
History teacher.
I thought you called your staff by their surnames.
Not so much now we're doing A-levels. It's really down to what the individual member of staff wants. Nigel's always wanted us to call him Nigel. He's anti all that formality stuff.
Ah.
Very laid back and cynical. Mm-hmm. He's got quite a cynical view of history, actually. Whatever comes up, he keeps saying, and once again, of course, it was the bourgeois who triumphed. You know, every change of government, every revolution, every war. When it all settles down, whatever the ideology they were fighting for, he reckons it's the bourgeois who always come out on top.
Well, he could be right. Look at New Labour.
Trouble is, Nigel hates the bourgeois. Mm. And I know when I come out with something like, it's better to travel hopefully than to arrive, even if he doesn't say it, he's thinking that I'm irretrievably bourgeois.
Well, perhaps you are.
Anna, that's an appalling thing to say.
Emily, love, if you've been brought up by middle-class parents in Beckenham and you go to a private girls' school in Beckenham, it's more or less impossible to escape being bourgeois.
God, that's depressing. You mean you can never get away from the appalling legacy of your birth?
Well, I think you're being a bit melodramatic. It's not as if you were born with a congenital wasting disease or a hereditary urge to murder people. And compared to that kind of thing, being bourgeois is not so bad.
Isn't it?
I mean, Czechoslovakia, the bourgeoisie, never really went away. Communism presented a kind of inconvenience, but a lot of them managed to get round it. The Czechs are a very practical people.
Have you been there a lot, Nigel?
Oh, yeah. Good few times over the years. Before the Velvet Revolution and after.
Do you have a lot of Czech friends?
Oh, sure. Had quite a serious affair with a Czech, actually. Magda. They have amazing cheekbones, a lot of the Czech girls. I think I've seen more beautiful women on the streets of Prague than in any other city in the world.
What happened to her? Magda.
Oh, it ended. These things end. Love has a natural span, you know. Some affairs last longer than others, but they all end eventually.
And yet we're all still brought up to believe in the one perfect relationship, which is going to last throughout our lives.
Well, depends who brings you up, I'd say.
If it's parents like mine, Nigel, that's how you're brought up.
I can believe it.
They went to Prague a few weeks ago.
A package, I bet.
Oh, yes. Posh hotel, lots of sightseeing.
My idea of hell. Are you never going to meet anyone that way?
No. My parents don't go abroad to meet people, always keep themselves to themselves.
Then what is the point of going? They can keep themselves to themselves in Beckenham. In fact, there's nothing else you can do in Beckenham.
Sure.
Why do they go abroad, then?
I don't know. So that they can come back to Beckenham with a bunch of photos to prove they've been somewhere else.
It makes no sense. I mean, the 60s might just as well not have happened. So many people get so little out of life. There's all this experience out there, and they ration themselves to like 1% of it. Certainly around here. Everyone tucked up neatly in their beds by 11 o'clock. They all seem to keep spinning around the same tiny circuit. Sainsbury's, the gym, the golf club, inviting the same people to yet another dinner party. That seems entirely pointless to me.
Oh.
What's the problem?
It's just... Well, it's rather embarrassing, actually. You know my parents were saying they wanted to talk to you about my choice of universities and whether I should take a gap year or not.
Sure.
And my mother typically said, oh, why don't you invite Mr. Patterson around for dinner? It'll be much easier for us to talk then.
So?
Well, I'm sorry. Having heard what you think about dinner parties, I feel awkward even mentioning it.
It's not a problem.
Mummy suggested Saturday week, but if it's too short notice...
No! That'd be great. I'll look forward to it.
I don't know how you can say that, Anna. We're entirely different from our parents.
Who's we?
Roger and me.
Ah.
Roger's parents lived in India, so our lifestyle's totally different from theirs.
All right, I'll buy that. Ours didn't live in India, though, did they?
No, but ours were, well, of their time.
Just as you and Roger are of your time.
Exactly. And then there's geography. Roger and I live in Beckenham.
I do know that. I drove here. And I have been here before, actually.
What I'm saying is that Beckenham's rather different from where we were brought up.
Not that different. Beckenham's just a middle-class suburb.
Oh, I don't think of Beckenham as a suburb.
I don't know what else you can think of it as. It is the archetypal middle-class London suburb.
Outer London suburb?
All right, outer London suburb.
Well, very different from those ghastly inner London suburbs.
If you insist. But in fact, except that it has a smaller garden and is generally smaller, this house is not so very different from the one in which we grew up.
Anna, how can you say that? This house is in Beckenham. The house we grew up in was out in the sticks. We were country children.
Hardly.
Oh, yes. We grew up without any of the things that Emily, Harriet and Benji have always taken for granted.
Like what? Urban sophistication?
Exactly. Here in Beckenham, it's so easy for us to go into London for picture galleries, the theatre, the opera.
So, when did you last go to a picture gallery? Or a theatre, or an opera?
Well, that's not the point. The point is that we can go whenever we want to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the country, there's no culture, there's no interesting people. When we were growing up, we never saw anyone intelligent and vibrant.
Like all those intelligent and vibrant colleagues of Roger's you mix with nowadays.
Anna, I wish you wouldn't trivialise everything. Can't you ever be serious?
I was being entirely serious.
All I'm saying is that where we grew up was stultifyingly boring. There was no culture, nothing to do, and the people were all half-wits.
You haven't forgotten I still live there, have you, Victoria?
Of course not. I didn't mean all the people. Obviously, there are exceptions. People who are a bit more intelligent.
People like me, three-quarter wits, perhaps.
Don't be silly, Anna.
Oh, sorry.
And then think back to the narrow, old-fashioned attitudes our parents had. Our mother always worried about what the neighbours thought.
Well, given the way our father behaved, that wasn't so strange.
No, but remember what it was like. Mummy lived in a perpetual state of paranoia,
always worried about some imperceptible social slight given or received, some tiny nuance of snobbery. At least I'm grateful to have grown away from all that.
And you reckon in the country all that still goes on?
Hardly surprising, is it? Nothing else to worry about out there, is there? A child doesn't get much intellectual stimulus growing up next door to a field of cows, whereas here in Beckenham,
a child grows up next door to Catford.
Anna, please. You don't say that to people, do you?
What do you mean?
You've never told anyone that your sister lives next door to Catford, have you?
No.
Thank God.
I usually say next door to Penge.
What?
Anna, you do talk rubbish. I've lived my life completely differently from the way our parents did. For a start, I'm the first person in our family who's ever gone into the theatre.
You're not the first one who's ever been theatrical.
What do you mean? Who else has been?
Victoria's certainly capable of the odd drama queen moment.
No, she's not. She's always been dreadful. Terrible embarrassment in school plays. Her to Tanya, dear, oh dear. She was so wooden you couldn't tell where the set stopped and she started.
I didn't mean...
I remember the girl who played bottom whispered to me at the dress rehearsal, "Your sister's got a great future as an arnic board."
Charlotte, I wasn't talking about actual acting. I was saying that Victoria is capable of getting over-emotional and throwing the odd tantrum.
Anna, darling, I'm disappointed in you.
Why?
It is so difficult to get the average, ordinary, common or garden person to understand what it is we actors do. Like everyone else, you've fallen for the accepted stereotype. It is so, so wrong. Acting is nothing to do with getting over emotional and throwing tantrums. What we actors are always searching for is truth.
Ah.
We don't pretend to be things, we are things. Pretense is the sign of a bad actor.
Right. All I was
And the ability to act is God-given. It's nothing to do with how you were brought up or who your parents were.
Then why are there so many successful sons and daughters of famous actors and actresses? No, that's just nepotism.
No, my talent as an actor came from nowhere. It was quite simply something I was born with, like red hair.
But red hair's inherited. That definitely runs in families.
Anna, you're so picky. So obsessed with detail. You can never see the bigger picture. But, and that's certainly something you inherited from our parents. You know, I feel sorry for you in some ways.
Thank you.
Never managed to break away. It's partly being older, I suppose.
Why?
You were exposed to more of that mind-crushing conventional mediocrity that our parents worked so hard to develop.
Charlotte.
Victoria, too. Neither of you really had a chance. You were already ruined by the environment before I was born.
And then you arrived as the breath of fresh air, did you? The free spirit who could shake off the manacles of our upbringing. You were born with self-expression already flowing in your veins.
And with exceptional talent as an actor, yes. Oh, look, please don't get me wrong. I've always known I was different from you and Victoria, but I hope I'd never let it show.
You mean you've treated us as normal human beings? As if we belonged to the same species as you?
Yes, I like to think I have. And the three of us have always kept in touch, haven't we?
At times, you and Victoria have only kept in touch because I've acted as mediator between you.
That's because Victoria's never been easy. Such a prickly person.
Unlike you?
Very unlike me. And I've never had any big bust-up with you, have I, Anna, darling?
Well?
Because you've always been such an easy person to get along with.
Thank you.
There's nothing much to argue about with you, is there?
No, no, nothing. I have no personality at all. So... have you and Victoria been in touch recently?
Oh, yes, she rang in yesterday. Wants me to go to dinner next Saturday.
She asked me, too. I said I didn't think I could. I'm involved in a fundraising auction thing for the local hospital. Don't think I'll be through in time to get to Beckenham for dinner. Or even for coffee afterwards, as she was suggesting. What about you?
Hmm?
Are you going to Victoria's dinner party?
Don't think so. Told her I had a vague arrangement to go to a show with a chum that night.
Male chum?
Anna. I'm not seeing anyone at the moment.
Mm?
I haven't seen anyone since I told Des to get lost. I've given up men. I'm just not interested in them anymore.
Ah.
Anyway, the chum I was talking about could be either male or female. It's one of those chums who doesn't exist. An imaginary friend. I just didn't think I could stand another evening of Roger's so-called conversation.
Well, Roger won't be there. He's off at a conference in Munich.
Oh? Did you know that before you invented your hospital fundraising auction thing?
Charlotte, don't judge everyone by your standards. My excuse is a genuine one.
All right. He's got two shoes. So if neither of us goes, I suppose Victoria will call the dinner party off.
Of course she won't. It wasn't set up for us, you know.
Oh?
No. The event is chiefly, I gather, in honour of some charismatic teacher of Emily's.
Oh, I certainly won't go. The thought of spending an evening listening to some earnest left-wing spinster is...
No, it's a male teacher.
Oh. Oh, well, it is a long time since I've seen Vicky. Perhaps I should bite the bullet and do the decent thing. She does always try so hard on these occasions.
No, Emily, I never got round to driving. I figured, what's the point? You learn to drive. Next thing you're going to get a car, and a car needs maintenance and insurance and fuel and somewhere to park it, and suddenly you're into a whole lot of ownership hassle. So all you've ended up with, as ever, is more baggage and no benefit.
Except the ability to get yourself around easily.
Yeah, sure, but you can always get around if you really want to. I mean, everyone's got public transport of some kind. Better than that, there's hitching.
Yes. My parents have never been too keen on my hitching. You know, on my own.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's different for girls. Particularly nowadays. Have to be careful. In the early 70s, you know, I hitchhiked all the way to Nepal. You could do that kind of stuff in those days.
On your own?
No, I was with this girl. Oh, Jilly. Oh, we had a great time. Thought it was the real thing, but, you know.
It ended.
Sure.
Nigel, you always make it sound as if you've had lots of relationship.
Uh-huh.
And they all seem to have ended.
Well, must have done. Otherwise, I'd be shacked up with someone now, wouldn't I?
But you never make it sound as if you regret any of them.
Regret is for losers. Every experience you have enriches your life. Certainly every love affair.
So you've never felt that your inability to form permanent relationships reflected some kind of inadequacy in you as a human being?
What?
I'm sorry, but I'm constantly being told that a sign of being a mature adult is the ability to sustain long-standing relationships.
And shall I tell you why that is? Because it's convenient. Society's easier to manage if its members are all controlled in nice little units. Mother, father, two kids, everyone working away so hard to keep up their standards of living, they don't have time to use their imaginations. Never forget, the ultimate control freak is the bourgeois.
I suppose you're right.
Emily, it's not a matter of right and wrong. I don't care about right and wrong. I'm just concerned that people should be aware of the full potential of life. I mean, there's so much of it out there, and we should all be widening our focuses, not narrowing them down even further.
Sure.
I mean, that's what life's about. The rules are there to be broken. Rules are only conventions anyway. Conventions created by people who are too frightened to make their own way and so followed the old paths trodden down by generations before them. Think for yourself. That's what you've got to do. Ask questions and provide the answers that work for you. Stay up late. Try drugs if you want to.
Yes, I have. I want.
So why should everyone feel they have to get married? Why should relationships be expected to last forever when the evidence is out there that so few of them do? Why should it be wrong for someone a lot older to get together with someone a lot younger? If that's what they both want to happen.
Oh, look, here we are.
Sure.
I wish I could promise you a stimulating bourgeois-free evening, which will end up with everyone smoking dope late into the night. But I can't.
Don't worry. It'll be fine. Thanks for the lift.
And, of course, one has to think ahead to where a university degree is going to lead, you know, in career terms.
Well, I'm not sure that...
These are Mum and Dad's priorities, I should point out, Nigel, not mine.
As if we couldn't tell.
But, Emily, darling, you want a good career, don't you?
I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, at least until you...
Marry, were you about to say?
No, of course not.
Generally speaking, me and my friends don't think of marriage as that important, Mum. Okay, get married if you want, but certainly don't let it change the direction you intend your life to take.
Oh, Emily, stop talking as though you're telling us something new. Yours isn't the first generation to think like that. My attitude to marriage has always been exactly the one that you described.
As can be judged by how long your marriage lasted.
I might have known I could rely on you for a snide line, Biggie.
All I'm saying is that our generation still thought of marriage as the main goal of a woman's life.
Your generation may have done so, Vicky. Mine certainly didn't.
Charlotte, you're only 4 years younger.
Hey, cool it. Don't let's get heavy here. What we should be thinking about is what's best for Emily.
Yes, of course.
Does she want to follow the predictable route of university, good job, career structure, or does she want to live a little?
Oh, I don't think she wants to live a little.
How do you know what I want?
Because you're my daughter, because I know you. It's not as if you haven't lived a little already, Emily, love.
How? How have I lived a little?
Well, you've been abroad a lot. We've always had foreign holidays. The Dordogne, Corfu, Tuscany, you've seen the world.
I've seen a few carefully selected bits of the world, and even then I've always been surrounded by a bunch of other bourgeois Brits.
Emily, that is very ungrateful. After all the money your father and I spent...
This isn't really the issue, Victoria. The real question we're discussing is, should Emily go straight to university or should she take a gap year to kind of, you know, open up her mind to different possibilities in life?
Different possibilities in life? I'm not sure I like the sound of that.
You've never liked the sound of anything different, have you, Vicky? You've always been irredeemably square.
Now, that is not...
No, Nigel. Vicky's never touched any drugs in her life.
I'm not ashamed of that.
Except, of course, paracetamol for her endless headaches or migraines, and insists on calling them. She's never done the real stuff. Whereas I had my own first encounter with partridge powder when I was 14. And that was the same year I lost my virginity, actually. Sex, drugs, whatever it was, I needed to explore it. You can't reject something until you know what you're rejecting. You've got to try everything.
So at 14, you were this promiscuous pothead, were you?
Oh, yes, all right. Yes, I was.
You don't remember, do you? That I met you when you were 14.
What?
Met you too, Victoria.
Did you?
Came to the house a few times. You don't remember, do you?
Nigel Patterson?
Yeah?
Do you mean you were the same Nigel Patterson who came... with the long hair and the see-through shirt?
And the temple bells round my neck, right.
Good heavens, you came to our parents' house. Yes, I remember. Yeah. Goodness, I thought you were cool. A genuine hippie. I thought Daddy'd have an apoplexy when he held out his hand for you to shake. And you raised two fingers and said, peace and love.
I don't remember that.
You came to the house, yes. What did you think of it?
Well, fine, what you'd expect. Very bourgeois, pretty much like this place, actually.
Ah.
And then there was you, Charlotte, wasn't there? I met you around that time, too.
Yes.
The promiscuous pothead. Dressed in a neat blue gym slip and white ankle socks.
Mm.
Bit of a daddy's girl, as I recall.
Maybe a bit.
Didn't see much evidence of a drug habit or a rampant sex life.
No, it was probably later that I started. One gets so confused about time. So easy just to lose a few years.
You always find it pretty easy, certainly.
So are you telling me, Charlotte, that all that stuff you always gave me about your wild teenagers... and what a tearaway you were, and how badly behaved. It was all a load of rubbish.
I think you have to own up to the truth, Charlotte. From the moment I walked into your parents' house, I could feel the fumes of bourgeois values virtually choking me.
Yes, maybe, but I've moved on a lot from then. Unlike Victoria, my lifestyle since has been very different.
You can take the girl out of the bourgeois, but you can't take the bourgeois out of the girl.
I'm really enjoying hearing about your teenage years, aren't you, Charlotte?
But Nigel, why was it you came to our house back then? I can't remember exactly. What was that?
Daddy, I let myself in. My auction didn't finish early.
Oh, Anna, darling, I don't think you've met Nigel Patterson. Oh, but I have. Haven't I, Nigel? More coffee, anyone? Nigel?
No, thanks, sir.
Something more to drink?
Oh, no.
Right. Anything for you, Anna?
No, thanks.
So, you think a gap year might be the answer for Emily, do you?
Might be. Well, depends what Emily herself thinks.
What do you think, Emily?
Might be.
So, did you ever actually start your commune, Nigel?
No. No. Didn't work out.
Oh, it's lovely, of course.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. In the 70s, it was an actors' cooperative, all working together, profit-sharing, all mucking in a squat in Notting Hill.
But you did always keep your nice little flat in Pimlico to go back to, didn't you, Charlotte?
Yeah.
I don't think someone's going to be driving back tonight.
Nope. I'll make up a bed for her in the spare room.
Yeah, well, good Lord, is that the time? I shall be off, actually.
It's only just after 11.
Yeah, but, well, tomorrow's another day.
Tomorrow's Sunday.
Yeah, well, Sunday's another day, isn't it? So I think I'd better be. That's all right with you, Emily?
Sure. I'll just get
I'll take you home, Nigel.
But it's the wrong direction for you. I deliberately haven't been drinking in
the... Yeah, Emily knows the way to my
place. I'll take you home, Nigel.
You could have knocked me down with a feather, Anna, when you walked in through that door.
Thing I was involved with finished early. I'd tell Victoria I'd drop in if I could.
Oh, she didn't mention it.
Well, why should she? Did you realise who we were from the start? Did you make the connection when you first met Emily at school?
Oh, good heavens, no. It was halfway through this evening. I suddenly thought, my God... these are the two younger Roland girls.
Who you met when you were knocking around with their older sister.
Right.
A great affair that never was.
We were very young.
I was quite keen on the idea of sex, as I recall. I wanted to experiment, even put myself on the pill, which was very daring in those days.
Yes. What might have been, eh?
What might have been?
Well, we could probably have given each other a lot of pleasure.
Possibly.
Never too late, you know. We're more mature now.
But are you suggesting a second bite of the cherry?
Not exactly.
Nigel, if it didn't appeal to us 35 years ago when we were young and good-looking, what on earth makes you think it should suddenly appeal now?
You say it didn't appeal, but...
It clearly didn't. I offered myself to you, and you got all embarrassed. Maundadam, as I recall, about the demands of morality and saving it for marriage.
Yeah, but you have to remember I was brought up in Beckenham. I soon grew out of all that nonsense.
I'm sure you did.
It was just the thought, you know, sleeping with someone, having sex, anywhere near where my parents lived.
And then we were going to drive to Greece together, weren't we?
Yes.
To devote a summer to sun-drenched sex on Greek beaches.
Mm.
But then you got this psychosomatic stomach bug, didn't you?
It was genuine. It was one of my runny tummies. My mother said I'd always been prone to runny tummies.
So you had a note from your mother, didn't you? Nigel's not at all well and needs to be excused sex.
Anna, it wasn't like that.
Well, maybe not exactly.
Sorry. It was clearly a waste of space as far as you were concerned.
No. You meant a lot to me at the time. I was 18. I was impressed by you. Emily's 18. She's impressed by you, Nigel. Don't you think it's about time you stopped going for such easy targets?
But you mustn't think. I mean, I've never laid a finger on any of the girls.
But maybe not. But men in their 50s flirt in a way which is almost as unwholesome as finger laying.
Listen, Anna, I'm not...
I'm sure it's incredibly easy for you to impress your pupils with how laid back you are, how alternative, how uncommitted, what a highly coloured past you've had. And I'm sure their wide-eyed response is a wonderful massage for your middle-aged ego.
It is not.
Just lay off all that with Emily, okay?
Okay.
All right, is this it?
Yes.
This is your parents' house. This is where you were brought up.
Yes, well, I inherited it.
Oh, Nigel.
Yes, okay, it's not where I'd live from choice, but, you know, property prices are really high around here, and I couldn't throw up the chance, could I? Besides, it's a nice area. None of the riff-raff you get around the other parts of Beckenham.
Oh.
Apart from the school either, so I need to... What?
In episode 5 of No Commitments, Rosemary Leach played Anna, Nicola Paget played Victoria, Celia Imrie, Charlotte. Ashley Walter played Emily, and John Glover, Nigel. Music was composed by Elizabeth Parker. No Commitments was written by Simon Brett and produced by Maria Esposito.